We'll call the meeting to order. First item of business is to approve the minutes dated March 16th. Do we have a motion?
Seven.
Representative Morrow moves the minutes dated March 16th. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Members, today we have the item of business. We have two bills up. One is House File 860, the Beginning Farmers Bill, which we'll take up first, and then we'll do House File 1031 and discuss the 1039. Thank you, and discuss the DE1 amendment. We do have some individuals here that would like to testify that they could only come in today, so we'd like to take their testimony on that as well today. And then we do have members from the department here, Mr. Weinard, to discuss the dairy development program. Last night, members, the DE1 amendment was supposed to go out, and a summary went out instead. You have my apologies. I would like to, I was visiting with Representative Eakin, I would like someone to make a motion to suspend the rules temporarily so that we can take that up.
Mr. Chair, I would so move to suspend the rules.
So Representative Eakin moves to suspend the rules. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. So at this point in time, I will turn the gavel over to Representative Anderson, and I'll move up front so we can take up House File 860. Representative Morrow.
Just a quick question, Mr. Chair. Just want to confirm, and I think that we are clear on that we can bring amendments and there won't be a 24-hour rule for tomorrow's hearing on the bill.
So, Representative Morrow, we don't have a 24-hour rule. We have a 3 o'clock rule. However, we're going to be extremely flexible. We'll do that. It's only right, guys. We want to get this right, this bill right. We want to take testimony. We do have today, tomorrow, and Thursday if we need it. We can go into the evening as well. So, like I said, we want to be as straight up and open as we possibly can and take testimony. So, okay? Very well.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And first, members, I'd like to move House File number 860 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Taxes. Members, what this is, it's a beginning farmers program which deals with tax credits for the beginning farmers. And this bill was actually brought to me by members from the Land Stewardship Project. Of course, we have talked about the importance of getting young and beginning farmers into farming. You take a look at the aging populations and the importance to make sure that we do have the next generation coming in and that we have programs that will make it more conducive, if you will, to get people started in farming. So I have Mr. Tom Peterson here from Farmers Union to discuss the bill or help us walk through the bill as well. So at this time, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Peterson.
Welcome, Mr. Peterson, and introduce yourself for the record, please.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union. And this is a bill that, as the chairman said, land stewardship has been working on for quite a while, and Farmers Union's also supported it. I think the idea came from Nebraska, and Nebraska's had a beginning farm credit for a very long time. And actually haven't talked to them for like 2 years, but I think when I talked to the director of it 2 years ago, my direct question to their director was, has this helped bring new people into farming that wouldn't naturally get into farming without a relative? And she said, yes, absolutely. It's helped quite a few new people get into farming. So when you consider the average age of a farmer is 57 under the last USDA census, and it's going to be 59 in the new ag census, and that it'll also show that 6% of the farmers in Minnesota are under 35 years of age. And so if you go to try to buy land and you don't have a relative or you don't have somebody involved in it and you're just starting out, it's very difficult. And this idea is simply an idea to help provide a credit to somebody who's owns the land. And I think they tried to adjust. There was a lot of questions over the years, but I think a lot of it has tried to be addressed in Section 1, that, you know, you can see that you're not related by blood or marriage, and the, also the what is a beginning farmer, and then some of your assets, and then how the credit works. So that's about, you know, I do encourage you to just look at this. It's something that's, you know, I think all of you have probably been asked, what can we do to help beginning farmers and farmers that are people that are new, and this is simply an option for that. So,
Mr. Representative Hamilton.
Mr. Chairman, I do have one other person that would like to testify.
And welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Chris Liefeld. I'm here to testify on behalf of the Land Stewardship Project in support of House File 860. I'm filling in for Bobby King, who is, works for the Land Stewardship Project down at the Capitol here and is on paternity leave at this time. First, let me thank Representative Hamilton for sponsoring this bill. Land Stewardship Project is an organization with three main components: a farm beginnings program that works to help beginning farmers get started in farming, a local foods program, and a policy and organizing component. Land Stewardship Project supports this legislation because we believe it is important to encourage a new generation of farmers on the land. LSP started a farm beginnings program in 1997 when a group of Wabasha County farmers approached us about concerns where the next generation of farmers would come from. As a result, we started LSP started its engagement in the issue by developing a program that would include classroom instruction and on-the-farm mentoring. Since then, over 380 people have completed farm beginnings courses in southeast and western Minnesota, with over 60% of the program graduates still farming. Increasingly, among the top barrier for these beginning farmers is access to farmland, both in terms of renting or buying. A tax credit program is important at this time because we have a whole large segment of the baby boom generation about to retire, and many of these are farmers. Encouraging the current generation of farmers to give due consideration to a beginning farmer in selling or renting their property is important, not only for the beginning farmer, but also our rural communities. Rural communities need a younger generation of people getting started in businesses to have viable rural communities. This tax credit program is not the do-all, end-all for helping start beginning farmers, but it is a tool in the toolbox that gives a beginning farmer the opportunity to visit with neighboring farmers who might be approaching retirement and give them the ability to say, hey, there's this program that you could get some benefit if you consider renting to me as a beginning farmer. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of House File 860, and again, my thanks to Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, sir. Any questions from members of the committee? Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Hamilton, I know you and I have talked about beginning farmer programs, and I tend to agree with you on them. I don't know if it's a process question or a numbers question, Chair Hamilton, but I'm wondering, is there a fiscal note? I don't have any idea what a program like this would cost, and then I have a second question.
Yeah, Representative. There will be a fiscal note. It has been requested, and we'll have it before the Tax Committee.
Representative Morrow.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Hamilton, and maybe that's part of my trying to still learn about the process here. Whose target, if this were to become law, whose budget target would come out? Does it come out of the taxes target, or is it the ag target?
Representative Hamilton.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Morrow, come out of the tax target.
Okay. Thank you.
Question from Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hamilton, I think it's a great idea, and I know they said they're doing it in Nebraska. I was just wondering how similar this bill is to the one that's being used in Nebraska. I don't know if Mr. Peterson or anyone else would
With a shake of a head and a smile, and the words were pretty similar.
Okay, so the credit's about the same that's being offered there. And so.
He's shaking his head, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a couple of questions for Representative Hamilton. It looks like we have a tax credit for sale of assets, land or livestock. So someone selling land could take a tax credit, and land values are appreciating very rapidly here. But it looks like they could set their price and then take a credit for a land sale without any third-party validation of that price. Is that correct?
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are you looking under Subdivision 2, the tax credit?
Yes.
For owners and agriculture assets? It states that an owner of agriculture assets may take a credit equal to, and there's three options, 5% of the sale price of agriculture assets, 10% of the gross income or retail income of each of the first, second, and third years of rental agreements, or 15% of cash equivalent of the gross retail income in each of the first, second, and third years of shared rent agreements. I think it goes down there under C, 3.5 and 3.6. It does talk about for reasonable in multiple places on here, it talks about the approval of the authority, and this falls under the section of law of the Rural Finance Authority. So there would be oversight there as far as that's my belief anyway, my understanding.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then, so there, we'd have the Rural Finance Authority, Representative Hamilton, looking at it, but then the Revenue Department would have to audit. I'm assuming this would go on, so this is a state tax credit.
Yes, and under that same paragraph, 3.6 down there, it does talk about the Commissioner of Revenue. So, yes, there would be some oversight there as well.
Again, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hamilton, I'm going to Subdivision 3 here on participating in a financial program, and I'm just thinking I just did my taxes, and so participating in a financial management program for agriculture, I think, would be deductible right now on state and federal taxes, and this would be a credit. So if we already have deductibility, why do we need a credit for a financial management program?
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hansen, yeah, the credit is equal to 100% of the cost of participating in the program, or $700, whichever is less. I would call the testifier back up here if they would like to add any further explanation.
And Mr. Peterson will make his way down again. And when we're waiting, we want to say a welcome, hearty welcome to the ninth grade students from Heritage Christian Academy. They are here participating in the Minnesota Historical Society's Capital Historic Sites Voice of the People program, your role in Minnesota government tour and educational program, and to welcome kids into this is the Ag Committee. Mr. Peterson, are you ready to add some testimony? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the beginning farmer, they wouldn't have any income. That's the point as far as why this is needed. They wouldn't have anything to write off. They wouldn't have any additional income. So that's where this would help out to pay for that up to $700.
Any further questions? Mr. Peterson, when you're still there, I had a question. If this language is a couple of years old, taken from Nebraska, on page 2, line 1, talking about a net worth of not more than $200,000. Taking into account what's happened to ag prices the last couple of years, is that number still a valid benchmark?
Mr. Chairman, members, I think actually when we were doing it before, it was $100,000, okay. If I recall, and we had raised it in the Senate to $200,000. But and I just looked at the Nebraska website this morning, and I can't remember. By the way, they have a very good website, too, for beginning farmers. And actually, our Minnesota Department of Agriculture, I was kind of curious because I saw Nebraska had this great website, too, for all these links for people that are thinking about getting into farming. And our Minnesota Department of Agriculture also has one, so when you have people that are looking. But that is something that, you know, we'd have to consider. But I think $200,000, this is still the beginning person, so that I think that would still be pretty, I don't know, to answer your question. I think we could look at it some more. But
Representative Morrow had told that the Nebraska figure as of today is $175,000, so we're a little bit higher than Nebraska. But $200,000 would buy a 40-acre piece of ground nowadays, but we want to help our young people all we can. Any further questions from members of the audience or committee members? Any final thoughts, Representative Hamilton?
No, I appreciate the discussion. I thank Land Stewardship Project and Farmers Union and others for bringing this forward, and I ask for your support.
You renew your motion to send this on to the
Mr. Chairman, I renew my motion. House File 860 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Taxes.
All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion passed. Thanks, Representative.
So, Mr. Chairman, I would like to, at this time, move House File 1039, be recommended to pass and be referred to, we are just bringing it forward, we're bringing it up for discussion purposes only. However, we do have a DE1 amendment. So, Mr. Chairman, I would like to first move House File 1039, put it before us, so we can discuss it. And then, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the author's amendment, the DE1 amendment, to get the bill in the shape that I'd like to discuss it.
So, to the amendment, any questions from members on the DE1 amendment to House File 1039? All in favor of the DE1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Amendment is passed. Representative Hamilton?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And members, I think what I'd like to do is we do have a couple testifiers here as well. I want to make sure that we work them in. Maybe what I could do is just walk us through the bill first briefly, and then we could take testimony. And then we can come back and open it up for more questions today. It is my intent, and Mr. Chairman, I believe we talked with Representative Eakin as well. Again, tomorrow we'll take whatever amendments people have, it would be our goal to be able to pass it out by the end of tomorrow. If not, like I said, we can come back in the evening, or we have Thursday as well. That would be the intent. Members, to the DE1 amendment and to the Omnibus Ag Bill, tried to get as much input as the author as we possibly could from the governor's office, the Ag Department, of course, had multiple meetings with minority party members as well, interested parties. And at the beginning of session, we talked about prioritizing the number one mission of the Department of Agriculture is to uphold the integrity of the food supply. And one of the things that I have prioritized from the beginning and will continue to do so is the ag literacy piece. Whether it's 4-H, FFA, ag in the classrooms, I believe there's a true importance there as well. That's my personal thoughts, my personal belief. And so, knowing that coming into it, we tried to do just that. First, going back to what was handed out to us on the biennial budget changes from the Department of Agriculture and
in consultation with the governor. Again, we tried to take as much of this and incorporate it into the bill as well, and take as many as the governor's recommendations as we could. The governor had roughly proposed about a 12.6 or 12.8% decrease in the budget. Our budget came back, we were a hard 15. And so we had to make some difficult choices, there's no question about it. But again, trying to prioritize what it is that's important as far as the goal and the mission of the Department of Agriculture. When it comes to working off of this sheet, like I said, the Department of Ag and the Governor's Office helped put together. When it comes to the bioenergy and agri-value added programs, we kept that the same. The agency operating reductions, I'll walk through this. We are about 1.6% higher than what the recommendations came in, and I'll get into that more. The retail food handler fee increase, what we're doing here is we are funding this program, and I'll talk to that about how we're funding that program. The wholesale produce dealer fee dedication, we agreed with the governor's recommendations and the departments to roll that into a dedicated account under the agricultural funds. The ACRA surcharge minimum elimination, we agreed to do that as well. And the anhydrous ammonia inspection program, I want to visit with that as well. Mr. Bezicki was in our office, in my office, and we talked about this and had a very productive conversation, if you will, to address this. The counterpart, our counterpart in the Senate, has a very different bill than what we have, so we can anticipate this going to conference committee more than likely. I mean, that could be a fair assumption. I want to thank all the people from the department that came up and testified. It was very compelling. Like I said, these decisions are not easy. We had, I know there's been some additional cuts in areas, and I'll walk through that. And I did what I could, my due diligence, to contact the individuals that would be impacted by it. I've gone to board meetings and visit with board members about some additional cuts and reductions. So I've tried to do everything I possibly can to be straight up with everybody during this process. To the bill members, I believe everybody has a copy of the bill itself, and I'll just go through, do a quick highlight here. Page one, of course, you see the targets, the recommendations, the total targets. And page two, these dollar amounts are the same. And like I said, we prioritized protection services. That was our number one priority, protect plants, animals, and consumer food safety. We prioritized those and took governor recommendations. So you can go right down page number two. Those dollars are the same. The retail food handler fee on page number three, starting line 3.1, that is different from the governor's rec. Not as far as the dollar amounts. We've agreed to fund that program, but we did not put the additional fees in there on grocers at this point. And my thought process here is we took the testimony that we are about 40%, 40 to 45% deficient on our inspections. So we understand the importance. It was Representative Morrow that brought up the question about if we fund this, are we sure to make, or will we indeed be caught up? Or will we be back here in a year or two? And so that was the question that I brought forth from the department as well. So let's do this, let's get it off the ground, and we can come back here. And the language talks right here as well, that we'll report back on the progress to the ranking minority members of the House and the Senate and majority here. We can discuss this, and we can talk about the fees here in the future. And the other thing that we brought up with the department is about, I know they're doing some of this, but put an emphasis on the ability to cross-train as well, to where if we're deficient in one area, whether it be grocery store inspections or whatever, to where we could bring inspectors over and do additional cross training. I know some of that's going on. We're looking at doing additional. Down there, 3.14, that's Minnesota Grown Program. 3.30, that's grants for sustainable farming. Neither one of those have changed. 4.7, that's $100,000 for livestock siting issues and local zoning ordinances. That has not changed from the governor's recs. Organic certification on 4.25, that is the same. On line 5.17, this is the bioenergy and value-added agriculture. These are the ethanol producer payments. That is the governor's recs there as well. And we've made a change, but I'll get to that as far as how the dollars are to be spent, or how it's the direction, where they'll get the direction, how those dollars be spent. The dairy development program, we do have an individual to talk on this. We are proposing a 10% reduction to this program, and I'd like to bring them up here when I get done doing the bill to discuss that. Northern Crops Institute, 10% reduction, that's 6.19. And members, this is the one institute where I've put a couple calls in, and I have not made contact with the board members as of yet. But I'll continue to try to do that. The Minnesota Livestock Breeders Association on 6.23, the Agriculture Education Leadership Council, and the Ag Societies, in my mind, and the next one on page 7.6, the State Poultry Association. In my mind, when we're talking about ag literacy, ag education, the youth agriculture activities, 4-H, FFA, in my mind, members, this is where, by funding this is, again, in my mind, where those activities take place. And so that's why I prioritize them as well. On line 7.9, we did combine the Minnesota Turf Seed Council with the grants for the turf seed and the native plants. It goes to the same place. And visiting with them, we did take a 10% reduction there. On line 7.24, this is the Second Harvest Heartland. These are the milk grants. And we understand that this is an extremely valuable program. There's no question about it. It's a nutrition program. The question that I had is, in the event it is a nutrition program, does it belong in the Ag Bill, or does it belong in the Health and Human Services Bill? In this biennium, members, it's a much safer program if it's in the Ag Bill than in any of the other bills, and we can leave it at that. If it's not a nutrition program, if this was a program that was put in place to help out a struggling industry, if that was the intent, then I would question whether or not it should be milk grants, if that's the reason why it's in agriculture. And I just want to get this on record. In the event, you know, in 2009, 2008, the pork industry took an absolute shellacking, if I can use that word. So if this is a program to help struggling commodities, then just a thought, maybe it should be opened up to just that. And so, but if this is a nutritional program, then milk is extremely nutritious. It's a very valuable program. The only thing I would, what we should discuss in the future is whether or not it belongs in the Ag Bill and not the Health and Human Services Bill. But that is subject to a 10% reduction. I did visit with some folks on that as well. We prioritized on page 8, 8.19, the mental health grants. We prioritized those with a 0% reduction. The Horticulture Society, it's less than a 10%. It's about a 6% reduction on the Horticulture Society. On line 8.30, the fertilizer research, we didn't make any changes to that. On the next page, 9.15, the Board of Animal Health, we did take the governor's recommendations on that with a 5%, prioritize that as well. You take a look at the great work that they did and the value that they bring to the state. Case in point would be the outbreak of TB, bovine TB, and how they were able to address that and get that under control. So extremely valuable to the state without question. Under Section 6, 9.21, this is the ammonia anhydrous ammonia. There was a fee increase from the governor to do this. And the conversation that I had with Mr. Bezicki, and I believe this fee increase is in the Senate bill. The conversation that I had, again, we had a very cordial, productive, always look forward to working with you. It's about this whole program. And the thing that I brought up is in this language that we're adopting, it gives them the ability to move towards that if you're doing the inspections and you have the good handlers and everything, we can inspect them less and focus on the bad actors. My question was then, if we're able to do that, do we have to add more people to the program and everything else, or can we navigate through this? So like I said, the changes to the rules to do less inspection on the good actors are in here. And so the debate and the discussion is being had. On 10.15, violator liable for inspection costs. And, you know, if this is a $400 re-inspection cost to the individuals who are violators. Right now, that falls back on everybody else that pays into the system as far as that cost. And I'm saying if you're in violation and we got to come back, we being the Department of Ag have to come back and reinspect you, I think you should be paying for that. And so that is in there on line 10.2. The compliance inspection frequency on 10.28, that's more on the, of course, the inspections for anhydrous ammonia. On lines 11.7, that talks about the ACRA account, the surcharge minimum elimination. We took the governor's recommendations on there. And on the following page, on lines 12.21, that comes back to the lines 8 and 9 on the governor's, on that sheet, the governor's recommendations to dedicate that account into from the general fund to a dedicated account. On lines, let's see, no changes. On lines 13.19, this is the oversight for the what was the ethanol producer payments, and they are going into the AGRA account. The oversight was the commissioner would make the decision basically in consultation. We're turning that around, visiting with Representative Eakin and others. It is recommended now as it would be directed by the legislature. So the committee here would have the authority and oversight of how those dollars would be spent in the future. So that's where that change is. On lines 14.28, that's the Representative McElfatrick bill, and that was sent over by the Senate colleague as well, and that is to allow some acquisition of property around a fairgrounds, correct? Yeah, around a fairgrounds. So, and there may be some amendments coming forward on that. She's shaking her head yes. And so then on page 16, starting 16.3, that is the infamous Representative Erdahl's cheeseburger bill, members. So after much arm twisting, and I'm just teasing. That's Representative Erdahl's bill. A few of the bills that I talked with Representative Erdahl today, and he asked about livestock investment grants. The way the language sets currently for the funds that are left in the AGRA account, they can be used for livestock investment grants as well, along with Next Gen Energy Board and some of these others. So Representative Erdahl, he should be covered there. So With that, Mr. Chair, I would open it up for questions.
Thank you, Representative. And I have a question.
Oh, Mr. Chairman. Yeah.
Let's get our testifiers ready to head down here, but a quick question from Representative Eakin.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hamilton. I think it was just an oversight, but there was one piece that was missed on page 9, the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute. If you'd want to...
Let me go back.
Representative Hamilton.
Yes, on page 9, 9.16, AURI. You're absolutely right, and I apologize for that. It is a recommended in the bill here a 15% reduction. So, yes, thank you for pointing that out, Representative.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Hamilton, I was just wondering if you could just touch on the repealer at the very end of the bill, just say what sections are being repealed.
Yes, and Mr. Chairman and Representative Morrow, I believe, and we can have the department come up, I believe that is the ethanol producer payments. Because that program is coming to an end, and so it repeals the program. There will no longer be, once they are paid in full, I just want to stress that, the state is going to uphold our obligation to the producers, the ethanol producer payments, but it's coming to an end, members. We're paying that off, and I'm pretty sure that's the repealer, and the department members are shaking their head yes, so yeah, thank you. Mr. Chairman, I do have some testifiers. We do have, if they'd like to make their way up now.
Excuse me, has me come one quick question from Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's on page 8, and it's the money that is for mental health counseling. Representative Hamilton, I'm just wondering if this is language that's been in there before, that it's through farm business management programs at Central Lakes College and Ridgewater College, or if there were other colleges that previously were included in that.
Representative Hamilton.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Poppy, you're absolutely, that's what the program is. We had testifier, the STIS fund, one individual in the Minsky system that they're responsible for this. So yes, that's just the one.
And Mr. Chair, thank you, just to follow up then. And this is just where he's located, is that correct? I mean, that's kind of, it flows through Minsky, and this is where he operates out of, is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, that's correct.
Quick question, one more from Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm very willing to wait here. I know we've got some testifiers, but I did want to revisit Section 6 on 9.21, page 9. I'm just looking for a little more clarification there, and if we want to move that to a few minutes down the road, I'm fine with that, but I want to get back to that at some point.
Oh, let's take that one right now then, Representative Hamilton.
So, and Mr. Chairman, Representative, absolutely. Let's have those debates, because that is AURI. It's a 15% reduction.
Representative Purcell.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Hamilton, it's the ammonia, the insertion of the ammonia language.
Oh, it's not 9.16?
9.21.
Okay.
Section 6.
Okay. Representative Hamilton.
Mr. Chairman, what we will do is if Representative Purcells can hold off, we could ask Mr. Bezicki to come up as well, and we could discuss that at great lengths. We could. Is that okay?
Very good.
Okay, moving along, and again, a reminder that we have session at 12 noon, so we should be out of here by, I would guess, 11:45, so let's try to move things along.
So,
have a testifier?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, when we're talking about fee increases for inspections, I was visiting with Representative Beard, and Representative Beard had a few questions and concerns, and so he asked if a testifier could come in and just share some of their experiences, and so... at this point in time, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to turn it over to the testifier.
Welcome and introduce yourself, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Kay Thibodeau. I am the founder of the Suburban Home-Based Business Association, which represents a variety of direct sellers in the southern suburbs. I am also an independent chocolatier with Dove Chocolate Discoveries. And I just want to share a little bit about when you're looking at inspections, food inspections, and going back to the, I believe it's a 1974 law, how it actually affects those of us who are in direct selling, doing home parties. As you guys are probably aware, Watkins was one of the very first direct selling companies based right here in Winona, Minnesota. Started, I believe, over 130 years ago. They sell food products. Tastefully Simple, another homegrown Minnesota company based in Alexandria, sells food products. There are 14 other companies listed in the Direct Selling Association's listing that classify themselves as food and gourmet item food sellers. There are a number of other companies that also sell food products, even though that might not be their primary focus. Party Light, Celebrating Home, just a few of them, I have them written down, but those are a few that I can remember. Tupperware, Pampered Chef. Those, they all sell food products. And I'm afraid of what your intention was with the 1974 law is not probably what's happening right now. Our direct sellers in our association have actually been approached by inspectors and have been told they can no longer sell product, display product, sample product in a public setting. And they've also been told that if we're doing this in a home party situation where we give the product to the host to make for her guests, that we would also need a retail food handler's license and we would be subject to inspection. And as with that license being inspected, we could no longer store any type of product in our home, even if it's something that we're just using as a sample for our hosts. We would have to have it off-site, and that would be subject to inspection every year. I myself have been in contact with two different inspectors. I don't remember names, I apologize for that. But one of them found out about a craft fair that was going on at a high school. They had gone in to inspect the commercial kitchen in the high school and had seen an advertisement. And therefore, that particular inspector contacted the organizer of the event and wanted the name of every person that was coming to that event that might possibly be selling food products. And many of us actually pulled out of that event because that was the first time we'd ever heard of it. We didn't know that this particular law existed at the time. I did a little bit more due diligence with that particular inspector. Still did not take out a retail food handler's license. She actually told me that there was someone else that covered my area because I live in a different community. I talked with that inspector. That inspector never got back to me with any details. Because I asked that inspector, if I'm not sampling product and I'm showing empty boxes at an event, can I still take orders? And he said no. And he also said that, again, if I'm doing a home party, I can't be selling my product. So I guess my concern is, when we look at these inspections, who are you targeting? Is it the direct sellers like myself? There's probably over 10,000 of us here in the state of Minnesota. I know there's 16.1 million direct sellers in the nation. $23.3 billion of retail sales, and 25% of that is due to something in the home, whether it be food or home goods of some sort. So that's what I have to say, that's what I have to offer, and I'd like you to just consider it.
Thank you, Ms. Thibodeau. Any questions from members? Would you characterize this as a statewide policy or maybe one inspector that feels he needs to do this, he or she?
That's a good question. You know, there is a law in the books, 1970, like I said, I believe it's 1974 that it came out. I don't think that a lot of these companies were available at that time. I mean, Tastefully Simple didn't start until 1995. Dove Chocolate didn't start until 2007. So a lot of these companies were not available at that time, and I don't think that that law was targeted at home party plan. So I think it's a state law. The inspectors all have their own interpretation of what needs to be handled.
Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ms. Thibodeau, are these Department of Ag inspectors, or are you also being visited by Department of Health inspectors from various county establishments?
Thank you. That's
Ms. Thibodeau.
That is a great question. The ones that I have talked to are Department of Ag inspectors. I've been told, and I actually started with the health department. I called them and I said, what do I need to do? And because of the product type of products that I sell, because I sell nuts and I sell chocolate, they referred me to the Department of Ag. And so it was the Department of Ag inspectors that I talked with.
Follow-up, Representative? Representative Hamilton?
So, well, Mr. Chairman, like I said, we were talking about the need to bring us back into compliance, and I was visiting with other colleagues. Representative Beard said we have some people that he would like us to talk to. And the comment that was brought forward by others is that if we, being our inspectors, are focused on the true priority, if you will, the grocers, the delis, the, you know, go right down the list, and not be so focused on these home parties, then would we be, the question was, then would we really have a 40% deficiency in inspections? I think it's only fair not only take testimony here, but also hear testimony from the department. I believe that's only fair. But again, when we're talking about raising a fee increase on this, and we have concerns, very valid concerns like this as well, that's where it was difficult to get others to understand or accept the fact that we're deficient for all the right reasons. However, as a committee, in this bill, we are funding the program, but we're not putting in the, we're going to reevaluate it after 2 years. So,
okay. Yeah. Thanks, Ms. Thibodeau.
Thank you.
So,
testifiers so, coming down from the department now?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, okay. I think it would be beneficial to, just to hear from the department as well.
Welcome this morning, and identify yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, my name is Greta Gauthier. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Department of Agriculture. And I do have with me Dr. Heidi Kassenberg, who is the Division Director for our dairy and food. And I will turn it over to her with preface that we have been working with Tastefully Simple and based in Alexandria to address some of their licensing questions. That have come up recently, specifically regarding county fairs, craft shows, flea markets, that kind of thing. And I'll turn it over to Dr. Kassenberg to give you some more of the detail.
Welcome. Please identify yourself.
My name is Dr. Heidi Kassenberg. I'm the Division Director for the Dairy and Food Inspection Division at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss this issue. I guess a couple of things I'd like to discuss on some questions that came up was, will we be focusing on our home-based businesses, such as the previous testifier had described? Our delinquency rate is not based on those home businesses. These are these high-risk facilities are those that are such things as delis within grocery stores, places where food is prepared for large numbers of people that is ready to eat. So it is not the home-based businesses. That's not what we have based our 40% figure on. Regarding inspections of homes, I can forward you, or actually I'll have Greta forward you, our policy towards that we worked on with Tastefully Simple, which is an example of one of these businesses that use home-based sellers of their product. And I think you can see where we work with this company, and we'd be happy to work with any other company similar to this. And it describes that we do not go into homes to look for and license those folks that are giving out samples or selling product directly to their buyers. And if you look through those documents, which we'll get to you at the end of the session. The other issue is the particular high school inspection that had a craft fair there. I'm not so sure that that may have been Department of Health, because they generally do inspections of high schools, schools, any of the restaurants and food service type facilities. And that's not to say that our inspector that was discussing things with a constituent recently wasn't an MDA employee. I'd be very interested to know the names of those particular inspectors so we can get to the bottom of this. Generally, in these types of situations, if there's a constituent that's upset, they generally will call our department, and then we can handle it at that level. And that's generally how we like to handle those things, but unfortunately that did not occur. So here we are. I guess I can take questions, if there are any questions on this particular bill or how we do conduct our inspections.
Thank you, Dr. Kassenberg. I do not see any. Representative Szymanski has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I haven't quite thought through my question yet, but Dr. Kassenberg, I'm interested in this from two perspectives. One is that when we sell produce in the farmer's market, the Hennepin County Health Department likes to come around and check and see what we're doing and so forth. So they're enforcing various rules, especially regarding sampling of raw products and so forth. In your agency, do you go to the biggest retailers first and work your way down in priorities, or how do you scale your process so that you get the biggest producers inspected most efficiently?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Yes, that's exactly how we do that. What we look at is the high-risk facilities, and we can give you the true definition, the full definition of what are high-risk, medium-risk, and low-risk. It's fairly lengthy. So we can send that with you as well. Greta can send that out to you as well as far as what we consider high-risk. And then because we license to gross annual sales, that's how we determine which are the larger producers of food. So those are the types of facilities that we generally try to focus on first.
A follow-up, Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A little different question. You talked about the home parties where products are sold in the home. I believe at the invitation of the homeowner in a private residence. Are you telling us that the statute grants you the authority to make those inspections on a personal residence, private property, if you will, of an invitation-only based party?
Dr. Kassenberg.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm not clear what your question is.
Representative Szymanski.
In the statute that you referenced, it does give the agency the authority to invite inspect a private residence for an invitation-only type of party.
Yeah. Dr. Kassenberg.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't believe that is the case. If it was if they're advertising themselves as a food store of those types of situations, then we do have the authority to go in. But on an invitation only, those are not the situations that we focus on. In general, for those types of situations, if there's a complaint, for instance, then we would have to investigate, but we would not have the authority to go into that particular facility.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Bruce Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Doctor, for your inspectors, whether in rule or in your guidelines for hiring inspectors, what are the job descriptions for the auditors as far as where they're supposed to be inspecting, as far as we talk about home parties? Is that something that's under the jurisdiction of an inspector that they are supposed to be assigned to doing home inspectors inspections like that for products of this nature?
Dr. Kastenberg.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in their job description, it doesn't discuss the specifics of what they should be inspecting as far as home parties. And I think the document that I'll be sending around that discusses Tastefully Simple, which can be broader than Tastefully Simple, discusses that we are not to focus in on home-based parties. But we do get questions about them, so they are going to have to answer those types of situations.
A follow-up, Representative Anderson.
Thank you. So, Doctor, what are some of the questions that you get about home parties, if you can, in your memory?
Dr. Kastenberg.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we get questions about should they be licensed, and then other questions such as, can I store this product at home? And those are some issues where if they're storing a lot of product that they may need to be licensed, because there are issues with rodents, sometimes storing things in a home freezer where other things can be probably isn't the best idea. And so those things that we have to take on a case-by-case basis, but we do get questions about those not infrequently. In response to that, we've put together a question and answer document basically on the numbers of and the types of questions that we get. And so that will also be sent out to you at the end of this session.
Thank you. We'll take one more question in this area. Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Dr. Kastenberg. I was just curious about the you'd mentioned that if there's a person being inspected who has a problem, they often contact you or contact the department. And I was just wondering how widespread that was. A question was asked of the previous testifier, if this was something that was widespread. I guess I'd like to know that myself, if there's widespread complaints of this nature about, overly zealous inspectors or complaints about inspections that are being done that they feel are unwarranted or unnecessary. So if you could testify to that, give us some idea of how widespread complaints are, what kinds of complaints you've been hearing at the department.
Dr. Kastenberg.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we maybe get one or two complaints a year, and this is it does not happen very often. Sometimes there's a question about some scientific technicality as far as can this particular food product be displayed at room temperature or not. We get those sorts of questions, but as far as overzealous inspectors, maybe one, maybe two a year.
Thank you. Follow-up?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And then typically you follow up with contacting the inspector at that point. Okay.
I believe we are finished.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, that's exactly what we do. We talk to their supervisor. Generally goes to the supervisor. Or sometimes if it goes directly to higher-ups, we'll talk with the supervisor, we'll talk with the inspector, get the whole story about the particular situation, what the inspector said, what the constituent, we'll talk with them, too, to get their side of it, figure out what type of business that they're operating, and then make a determination after that. So it actually we do a fairly thorough investigation when we do have those types of complaints.
Thank you, Dr. Kastenberg. I believe we're finished with this area, and we'll move on to the dairy development program. You'll please identify yourself for the record.
David Winan, work for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, you have in your packet the handout that I'll be referring to throughout my testimony. I'm The Dairy Development and Profitability Enhancement Program excuse me, is composed of two components. First is the Dairy Profit Teams. The second is the Dairy Business Planning Grants. Dairy Profit Teams work with small to medium-sized farms who are either beginning or struggling with an issue. It could be low milk production. It could be low profitability. It could be a number of different things. It could be a beginning farmer trying to get established. All of these aspects reduce their productivity, profitability, and efficiency. The Dairy Profit Teams exist because of this funding, and they work with existing as well as potential dairy producers to succeed through team-based education, resources, and networking. They essentially act as a board of directors for this individual farm that meets around the kitchen table. The typical farm will contact either myself or the local coordinator in relation to starting a team. There is a $200 application fee that is charged to the farm. The farm's team has access to between $600 to $800 of services that they can utilize. This may be milk testing, it may be feed testing, it may be blood testing. They may do a whole herd workup because they believe that there's some disease that is affecting this farm. There's a number of other things that these scholarship dollars, $600 to $800, have been used to help farms. It may be legal for the farm to set up a will because they see the transfer of the farm being the most critical issue that is going to relate to the sustainability of this farm long term. It may be stray voltage testing. It may be a number of different things in relation to what is the one or two things that's holding this farm back. In 2010, there was 366 dairy farms that participated in this program. The results from that are an increase of $16 million in gross revenue to those farm families that participated in the program, which, in doing my math, is a 30-to-1 return on that investment. In addition, the industry has contributed approximately $1 million almost every year since this program has been in inception. So that in-kind contribution of the industry is the veterinarian's time, it's the nutritionist's time, it's the agronomist's time. It's those people that are helping and acting as a board of directors for this farm. Second component is the Dairy Business Planning Grants. This is a one-to-one match with the farm to help them develop a business plan for their operation. It's a $3,000 grant that works with developing a more detailed planning and strategic planning for this farm as they move forward into the future. Producers have applied for this grant, have explored the feasibility of expansion, environmental upgrades, stray voltage testing, as well as getting started in farming or transferring the farm to the next generation. At the bottom of the page, you'll see a typical dairy profitability team that includes everyone from the extension educator, farm business management, another dairy producer, nutritionist, veterinarian, milk processor, etc. And on the back is the distribution of the funds this last fiscal year, where these funds went. Sustainable Farming Association, as well as the different regions across the state. The two maps that you have denote more detail as it relates to those farms, where they're located, and on the back side of that is the dairy business planning grants, and as far as those go. The last thing that I'm going to mention is the Dairy Profit Teams, as well as the business planning grants, have worked to not only retain those farms, but make them more profitable and efficient. And those farms that participated last fiscal year, they contributed an extra 839 cows to the state, which may seem like a small number, But that added additional 16 jobs to rural Minnesota. The dairy business planning grants, those farms, if only 75% of those farms decided to move forward with their expansions, there would be an additional $3.1 million in gross income for those farms added to rural economy, adding additional 29 jobs to the area. And I'll be open to questions, Mr. Chair, this time.
Thank you, Mr. Wine. And I have a question. What is the percentage cut to this area? I'm having a little trouble finding it in the spreadsheet. Representative Hamilton?
Mr. Chairman, it's 10%.
10%?
Yes.
Thank you. And that applies to both sides of this, both the dairy profit teams and the dairy business planning grants. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that's correct.
And one more question from me. Are there folks that apply for both of these programs, or are they kind of a separate, two separate things?
Mr. Chairman, yes. There are farms that do apply for both, but I can only fund about 20 to 30 business planning grants every year. So there may be a farm that's going through a farm transfer or looking at expansion that is working with the dairy profit team, but they may or may not apply for a business planning grant.
So can you give us an idea of how many applications you have compared to how many you're actually able to accept?
Mr. Chairman, I will be starting a waiting list starting probably next week for the dairy business planning grants until the next fiscal year. Typically, I receive about 30 to 40 business planning grants every fiscal year. And those farm applications that are not honored during the current fiscal year are held over on a first-come, first-served basis for the next fiscal year.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow up on that same question, the dairy business planning grants, it says a $3,000 maximum. Is there more a lesser amount that's an average type of grant in that area?
Mr. Whelan.
Chairman, Representative, yes, the average has been typically about $2,500 for every business planning grant, but they're obviously, if you're going through a lot more detail, I'm looking for a lot more detail when I audit the business plan when it comes back.
Thank you. Representative Bruce Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. is the $200 that the individual farms pay in, is that a one-time $200, or do they have to renew that every year?
Mr.
Or every biennium, whatever?
Chairman, Representative, yes, it is an annual sign-up fee, an annual application fee.
And, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, a follow-up, Mr. Anderson.
Thank you. Mr. Winan, as you go through the 366 dairy farms, it shows here that you find significant returns on different areas such as cost savings of feed or labor expense or whatever they may find as they go through. You mentioned stray voltage. And are there results in that area? Because you brought it up, I thought I should ask.
Mr. Winan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, yes, there is results. There was specifically, I know of a farm in Otter Tail County that had a Summit Excel count of 700,000. And for members of the committee, the legal limit to sell your milk is 750,000. So they were right up against the ceiling of being legally able to sell their milk. After going through the testing and implementing some changes, their Summit Excel count is running around 100,000. So a significant reduction in their Summit Excel count, which also made them eligible for premiums from their processor, increasing the return on their investment, the accountability towards making change to their farm.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wynan, so that was one example in Otter Tail County. How many, in your experience of being the director there, how many of these individual farms have had problems with that, and you've seen results from your recommendations with this team, profit teams that you've gotten, other than the Otter Tail County? Are there others that you can give example? I'd like to have, if you have some information, just to give me on that. That would be great for later. But I'd like to know if you have off the top of your head right now, how many have experienced results, positive results.
Mr. Wyman.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I would be happy to deliver those details to you in the next day or so.
Thank you.
Thank you. I see no other questions. Representative Hamilton.
Mr. Chairman, a question was brought up about accountability in this program. In the event a producer would ask the team to come out and the resources were allocated, what type of responsibility does the producer have to implement the plan, and is there any follow-up after that? I know that was a question that was raised, and I'd just like them to address that, if you would, please.
Mr. Wyman.
Mr. Chair, Representative. There is accountability from the standpoint of the dairy profit team to offer suggestions for the farm to help them. There is only a 3-year limit that any farm can participate in this program. And a change may take a couple months. It may take a couple years to implement. Something as easy as feed testing might be able to be accomplished within a couple of weeks. Something in more detail, like a farm transfer, may take up to 3 or 4 years to actually become implemented. But in almost every case, the farm families do follow through with the recommendations provided by the dairy profitability team. And it's there to their advantage. They've got skin in the game. They've got that $200 that they've paid that helps them improve the profitability of their farm. And that sustainability or that profitability is all about being here long term.
A follow-up, Representative Hamilton.
Yes, thank you for that. The other question that was brought up is that we have a dairy development and profitability enhancement program, and the question was brought up is, does this team also help other species, whether it be the poultry industry, the beef cattle, the pork industry? Is that a possibility going forward? Could these individuals be cross-trained there as well? And, that's one of the questions.
Mr. Winan.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, the dairy profitability teams are specifically dairy. There has been interest by the beef industry to expand the dairy profitability teams into that area, but as of the 10 years that I've been at the department, we've only been approached by the beef industry thus far.
Ms. Gaudier.
Mr. Chairman, just a point of information for members and Chairman Hamilton, too. It's my understanding that this program before you was created in around 2002, particularly because the dairy industry was in a very difficult economy at that time. And we think it's been very successful at the department, and we think this model could work for other areas of agriculture, but we simply didn't have the funding authority and the direction to go do that from the legislature. So just to put it out there that we think it's a very good model, this bringing a lot of expertise to bear with one person who's having a very difficult or not realizing their potential on their farm. Point of information, when it was started, it was to address a situation in the dairy industry.
Thank you. Representative Hamilton.
And Mr. Chairman, the last question that was brought up was, is this also covered by the farm business management programs at the MNSCU system?
Thank you. Who would care to address? Mr. Winan.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it is not. There is, if the farm has obviously needs a financial analysis or the best source of information for that farm is to have their finances analyzed and determine if
renting that additional 60 acres is a good idea, or expanding the operation is a good idea. Those services are provided by Farm Business Management, and their part of their tuition is covered by that $600 to $800 worth of scholarships that's available for the farm.
Thank you. Representative Bruce Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This little bulletin that you have here, I'm looking at the area that my county is represented in, Wright County, and I see some names for other regions, but I don't see a name for, I see Cologne, Minnesota, but who might be the person that would represent or be the director for my area?
Mr. Wynand.
Chairman, Representative Anderson, yes, the individual was recently hired. Kim Hausladen is the individual in the DPEP area who has just recently been hired.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Wynand, thank you, Mr. Chair. As you say, is it Kim or Tim?
Mr.
Wynand.
Kim.
Chairman, Representative Anderson, it's Kim with a K.
Thank you.
I see no other questions. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Taking out the testifiers there, Mr. Chair. So with that, went through the bill. I'd open it up for any questions at this time, Mr. Chair. I believe we have, what, about 5 minutes for questions today or additional testimony today. I'll leave that up to you, Mr. Chair. And otherwise, like I said, amendments and testimony tomorrow.
Representative Eakin.
Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hamilton. Certainly appreciate the open process that you've laid out here and including us in the process, and appreciate the opportunity to offer amendments later as well. I don't anticipate there's going to be many amendments. I think the governor's proposals were very good for agriculture this year, and the bill that's being put forward here isn't far off from what the governor is proposing, and so I think that we can get something put together here. There are some concerns that we have. I've expressed to you, Mr. Chair, the concerns that I have about cuts to AURI, I think that we can leave some of that discussion for later when we come forward with the amendments. But again, do appreciate the open process and look forward to working with you later today on this.
So,
Representative Hamilton.
Representative Eakin, thank you for that. And like I said, these have not been easy. Extremely difficult decisions, trying to prioritize as well, taking a look at some historical data, building off of that. If you have other suggestions, you know, we're all ears. Like I said, this is in the past, you know, we've always tried to keep this bill moving on a bipartisan basis, and we'll continue to try to do that. But like I said, we have challenging times. There's no question about it. So.
A question. Did you have a follow-up, Representative Eakin? Question from Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm happy to revisit this section, the ammonia definition. And I just heard Representative Eakin say later today, and are we coming back later today? That was my other question.
Not to my knowledge, Representative Purcell. Okay. Perhaps Representative Eakin would like to come back.
Well, Mr. Chair, we're going to be meeting later today, so I should, probably be in contact with Chair Hamilton as well.
Representative Hamilton.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Purcell, Mr. Buzicki will be back tomorrow to answer questions and to follow up on that as well.
Thank you.
So we can address your concerns.
Thank you. I believe we are finished for the day. We're finishing a little bit early. Perhaps you all have time to grab a quick cheeseburger before this session starts. This meeting is adjourned.